Ladies and gentlemen, this is a public service announcement. The show you're about to hear has a slightly lower audio quality because I was recording and mixing this show while on the road in China. I was also distinctively missing from one of these segments, and that's because I was literally on the road in China in the back of a taxi, going about 300 miles per hour with no seatbelts on, sometimes in the wrong direction, and actually ended up getting to the recording a little bit late. The other bastards being bastards decided to start recording without me. So, my apologies for that, and without any further ado, this show is sponsored by the glorious People's Republic of China.
Good morning, boys and girls. This is another episode of Bad Voltage. How are you doing today? My name is Brian. I'm joined by three of my friends, and we're going to talk about technology and stuff. Stuart, what are we talking about today?
I'm now genuinely quite worried here, but okay. The other shoe's going to drop at some point during this show.
Probably.
On the show, our main feature, we're going to be talking about a Hyperloop. Some of you may have heard about the idea of this incredibly high-speed transport. And is it a good idea? Is it bollocks? Which it might be.
Stuart. That sounds absolutely fascinating. Jono, do we have any other topics?
We're also going to talk about digital detoxing and getting offline and whether that's something that we should be doing. Is that important? And then segue a little bit into our reliance on technology and... again, is that a good thing for us as a human race? So, yeah. I have nothing else.
And now, that's Bad Voltage.
Over time, I've seen a whole bunch of people talk about taking a break from the internet or say that it's all got on top of them and they need to have a digital detox or something like this. And
yes.
I'm in two minds about this as a concept, right? Is it a good idea?
Is that because you're a massive nerd?
I mean, there is a tiny part of me which just thinks, oh no. How can I cope with the fact that I've got access to all the knowledge humanity's ever produced? That's terrible. What I must do is go and hide in this field with my plow or something.
Yeah, that's a good way to go.
I am kind of seeing that some people think that it's a good idea to take some time away and decompress and so on. Excuse me. What I'm interested in is, do you think it's a good idea? And when people talk about digital detoxing, do they actually mean cutting themselves off from the internet, or do they specifically mean social media? If you're having a digital detoxing thing, do you stop using Google or do you just stop using Twitter?
It's a good question. No. I mean, I definitely think it's good for you. I mean, people should do it and they should do it regularly.
Yes.
Just because it's like. I think more than anything in my mind is it's just the constant notifications that is unhealthy about the internet. And whenever I've seen people who do the digital detox thing, it's actually more about email than anything that I've seen. Like people say, oh, like there was actually a guy I've been working with recently who has been out this week and he said, you know, he's made it very clear to everybody, I will only be contacted in an absolute emergency. And I've heard that is the common way in which this tends to work.
But right. That's not a digital detox. That's just going on holiday.
Well, I think
But I think the idea was that he was going to make sure he's not connected while he's on holiday. So
right, I think this each year, right, you get more emails, more texts, more different apps that notify you, and that really changes how you interact with people, right? And I think that's what when people say digital detox, at least my interpretation is. It might be social media, but it's more mobile devices in general. I don't know that there's a concept of when you're at work during the day not using the internet is a different thing, right? And I think part of the reason that we need to take that break is because we've not really developed a healthy way to deal with mobile digital devices, right? There seems to be a social expectation with a lot of groups now that you'll answer every email instantaneously almost. Every communication has to be ASAP. Every participation has to be around the clock. And that's not healthy for a lot of your other relationships, but that's not really standing up to technology, right? It's standing up to your boss in a lot of cases, or to your friends in a lot of cases, and saying, if you email me on Friday at 1 a.m, I'm not going to respond because I'm not going to be checking my phone at that time. And I think right, there's kind of a lot of studies that I've been doing recently, and social media really appears to kind of promote narcissism. I think smartphones and tablets, to the level we're using them, are causing a little bit of insomnia and problems with blue light and other stuff. There's one study that claims that screens seem to be making kids less empathetic, with some fairly reasonable science behind it, right? And I think taking that digital detox and just look up from your phone for a day, it improves your posture, you develop better friendships, right? You're going to have improved memory because you're actually paying attention to the conversation as opposed to checking Twitter every 8 seconds, right? You're going to sleep better, and you're going to just, I think, have improved mental health in general, and that's really, really important.
So super friggin' important. So how often do you guys do this sort of thing? Like, so I kind of have a thing where, you know, one major meal of the day, we have no devices around. So on a daily basis, we have a couple hours where we're just totally disconnected every evening. And that's kind of nice. And then regularly, I usually try and take a couple of days out, through maybe 2 or 3 days, where I just have, I don't check my laptop, I don't have, you know, tablets or anything on me, and I just go totally disconnected 100%. And I take it all the way to the extreme of, you know, no devices at all, no using Uber, no nothing, because I notice as soon as I bring out a device that is connected, oh, I'm suddenly seeing everything else is out there, and then it's in the back of my friggin' head that I've got 10,000 emails and social media things I haven't touched yet. But if I don't know they're there, I can just put them off to the side and try not to worry about them. But do you guys actually do that fairly regularly? I mean, do you actually get to do that?
I do it about once a year, and I have to admit, I'm terrible at this, and I'm a giant hypocrite because I encourage other people to do it. But it's like, I've found actually it's got worse. I think a lot of this is dependent on the kind of person you are and the kind of life that you live. And the only reason why I say this is because when I compare and contrast being able to digitally detox when I was working for a company compared to working for myself, I find it way harder to do it now I'm working for myself, because I'm always feeling like I'm ultimately responsible, like the buck stops with me. Whereas when I worked for a company, it was easier because I could say, okay, well, I'm shutting my job out, as opposed to working for yourself. It's like, well, I'm switching it off, but oh, then maybe this may be at the detriment of something else. And so I found actually harder recently than before.
Honestly, I think you're setting expectations wrong then. Because I work for myself, and if an email comes in and it's 10:30 at night and I don't fancy answering it, I won't. Because
you've always been, and
I'm in the pub.
You've always been way better at this than I have. I mean, you've always been way better at disconnecting than I have. To be fair to
John, there too, you've been working for yourself for quite a while.
Oh, and, well, this is true.
You know, it's you've honed that, where he's a little bit. A little greener, still learning that. I agree.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think you've got to set from an early moment. And doing it as part of your job, as your career, as exactly you said, it's not standing up against technology, it's standing up against your boss. Make it clear that something comes in on a Saturday, no, I probably won't read it till the Monday. Or if I did read it, I'm not going to do anything about it till Monday, because I'm not at work. I have no problem with the whole continuous partial attention thing, you know, Linda Stone's term. I think it's fine. I quite like operating that way, being in touch with things. So I don't do the digital detox thing because I'm just not that worried by it. But part of that's because it doesn't peck at my head if I've got 5 emails to deal with and I'm not at work, because I'm not at work. You know?
Yeah.
So here's the thing that gets at me. So I'm a big science fiction nut, right? I read a lot of sci-fi books, and there's one particular sci-fi author that I've been a big fan of since, you know, since basically I learned how to read, right? So this guy is someone I've been following forever, reading all of his books, and he's written quite a lot of great ones. Now he's on social media, and I follow him on Facebook and a few other places. And every now and then I'll hop on Facebook and say, oh, what's he posted? And oh my God, he's posting a goddamn Russian novel to Facebook. Like, it's just a nonstop barrage of high impact, extreme interaction that he's having on Facebook all the time. And if you look back over the years, he writes a lot less books now because he's writing Facebook fucking posts. And when I look at that, it kind of makes me a little bit sick to my stomach, because realistically, yeah. Flash forward 5 years from now, would you have rather written 20 books or been really, really active on Twitter? Like, what's the thing that you would like to have chosen to do?
When you put it like that, it almost sounds asinine, doesn't it?
It sounds completely asinine.
Not in the slightest. What would I like to do? Boy. I'd like to, assuming I'm not writing in order to pay the rent and stay alive, right? Then I would like to write the stuff that I find entertaining. The idea that people should stop writing on Twitter and having fun and talking to their friends because, damn it, they need to write books for us is massively entitled, isn't it?
I don't know if it's entitled so much.
It raises a good point. Yeah.
It's your lasting legacy. So if you let's flash forward 50 years from now, right? You're old and saggy and your man bits don't work quite right. But you can look back at your published books, at your videos you've created, at your works of art, at your paintings, at your music, whatever, and point to it and say, that will last for goddamn ever. Or you could say, well, let me bring up my Twitter archives, because 47 years ago, I had this really witty exchange from some guy from Helsinki that I've never met. It's like, well, you're not actually going to see that, because Twitter.com probably won't even exist in 10 years, let alone 50 years, if you just go on odds. So all that, all those amazing conversations are gone. Now, if you had them via email, you could have them backed up. If you had a letter writing thing, you could have a shoebox full of really interesting letters between you and that guy from Helsinki. But your interactions on these social media sites, they're fleeting. They are not just going to end when you stop. Their archive of them is eventually going to just disappear, and no one on the entire planet Earth is going to give a shit that any of us had those conversations in 2 days, let alone 50 years.
I'm not sure I want my epitaph to read, he was really good at Twitter. We'd say more about him, but we only have 140 characters, right? That's not, I don't think how anyone wants to be remembered.
You've seen a whole bunch of actual famous authors have their letters published after they died. People like George Orwell, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of information exchange, I see no reason whatsoever why 50 years from now someone wouldn't publish a book of someone's Facebook posts and Facebook exchanges, for example.
That's actually, you know, now that you bring that up, I would like to see a book of nothing but Ryan Reynolds tweets, because that guy is fucking funny.
Exactly.
I'll tell you one person who does need to have that book published is James Blunt.
Yes.
James Blunt's tweets are
pretty funny.
Hilarious.
So now if you treat it like that, if you treat it like the world's weirdest form of poetry, where you have to come up with something witty in 140 characters, and use that as like your writing tool, like, okay, I have to write 10 witty things per day and post them, and then at the end of the year you go back and read it, make a book out of it, then I'm okay with it, and I'm all of a sudden thinking that this is a pretty fucking fantastic idea. But I'm okay with it. But realistically, if you're just using it as an always connected jack into your brain where other people get to poke at you all the time, I don't see it as all that useful long term. And so I kind of get the use of it. Obviously, I use it a ton. But disconnecting is just so important. Otherwise, damn it, I don't know that I would get all of my work done. I don't know that I would get things written. I just don't know if I would.
I actually think that it's a wider issue than just disconnecting. The thing that does worry me as I'm becoming a grumpy old man is the fact that technology, I think, is having a negative impact on face-to-face social interaction. And a classic example of that was when we went back to England for Christmas, and my cousin and my nephew were hanging out with each other. Well, sorry, no, my niece and my nephew were hanging out with each other. And they were just sat on their phones the entire time. And we had to tell them to get off their phones and tell them to be engaged. And I appreciate the fact that when we were kids, kids were still, you know, playing with their toys in front of their parents. But the thing that does worry me is the growth of narcissism. You see that it's rambunctious on social media. But also just this kind of impulse mechanism that people feel like they have to constantly check. And that impacts safe driving, that impacts, you know, social interaction. That to me is less about getting disconnected because people might be burning out from too much of it. It's more like there's just too much technology in people's lives right now.
If we did the Breakfast Club in 2016, it would basically be those kids just on their phone and the movie would be stupid.
But if you're trying to talk to someone and they're on their phone rather than talking to you, then be more interesting.
No,
it's
impossible to have an actual conversation with someone who's on their phone.
It's people are trained to be staring at their phones all day. People are walking around all day long staring at their phones. They do their social interaction that way. They play their Pokemon Go that way. They do everything just by walking around mindlessly staring at their phones.
I agree.
That's just what they're trained to do. And I'm not going to judge them for it because there was a point where I was getting to an extreme degree on that myself, and it was just ridiculous. It has to stop. You have to put an end to that. That is a bonkers, horrible way to just live as a biological entity. If you did that with, like, let's say a dog, let's take a dog and make it so all he ever does is look at like a little 3.5-inch diagonal vertical viewing area screen with a reasonably high DPI and just show him pictures of sticks all day, and all he does is just eventually sit there mindlessly drool out as his pupils slowly dilate into oblivion. Like, it's just that dog's gonna be the most unhappy little son of a bitch ever.
So, wow, we segue pretty neatly into virtual reality.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much what it is, right? I mean, it's just virtual reality with a limited field of vision. That's what this is.
I would also say as well, Ak, that I think you are a lot more socially responsible than most people. Like,
I was expecting the word inept there, so thank you. Well,
I did teeter on the edge of mockery for a second there. But I think that part of it is like I do disconnect at weekends. I don't touch my email at all at weekends, and I don't, you know, I kind of try to be good in that way. But we all grew up in an age where there wasn't the impact of technology that we have today. What does concern me is the world that Jack is going to grow up in, where everybody is just wedged into technology constantly, and to the point where I think it's actually addictive for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think people who, particularly kids, they can't get away because their entire world lives on that screen. So
I think it's important to just remember, and I'm kind of with Jono on this one, I am a little bit hypocritical here, because this is something I'm going to, after the segment, try to improve on. And I think it's important to remember, anytime you reach for your phone in a social situation, and obviously emergencies excluded, right, of course, right, you're checking out of the present rather than spending time with the actual people that are in front of you or the actual scenery that's in front of you. And I think I'm going to definitely be more cognizant to live more in the moment and be where I am, because what's on my phone will be there later when I get home or when I'm not in an interesting interaction.
Going anywhere.
And it's definitely this segment.
I'm going
to
do the same.
I think it's the impetus for me to try to get a little better at it myself, because it is something I recommend. It is something I'm terrible at. And part of it's also like, Jono, because
it's hard.
Work for myself. It's what if a client emailed me, or what if, you know, Linux questions is down, or so it's very easy to get wrapped up in that. But I think it's more important than I realized to be in the present rather than in the phone.
Hey guys, before we wrap this up, I just kind of wanted to reflect on something. Over the last many years, I'm pretty sure that all four of us have made a lot of fun of Richard Stallman's old way of connecting to the internet. And for those of you who are not familiar with this, so in the olden days, I don't think he does this so much anymore, Richard Stallman used to do something fairly simple. He used to not have Wi-Fi, even at the time. This was like even 5 years ago when Wi-Fi was prevalent. He only did Ethernet. And he'd get somewhere, he'd plug in his Ethernet, download into Emacs, because that's where he lives with everything, all of his email and all of the web pages that people suggested he read. He'd download offline versions of them, disconnect, and then he'd go about his way, slowly replying to emails offline so no one gets them yet, and reading some old web pages with some cool little tidbits in it and whatnot, and then he'd reconnect and all those new emails would be sent back out. Basically, the most old school way you could possibly imagine using the internet. It was fucking ridiculous in the 2000s that this grown man was living that way. And now I'm looking back at it, and I made fun of him. I'm like, what a Luddite. Wow, what ridiculous. And now I'm like, wow, that actually was kind of smart. Like, he wasn't needing to disconnect himself. He was connecting himself. He was coming at it from the reverse angle, where he went about his life, he lived his life, and then when he wanted to send and receive the information, he'd sat down, plug in the laptop, give it 5 minutes, unplug it, there we go, he's all synced back up. And so his total connected time was measured in minutes instead of in percentage of the day being more than 90%. And that's kind of amazing. And I kind of, in a way, want to live like that. Now that I'm older and approaching 40, I less want to make fun of Richard Stallman for doing that, and kind of wish he still did, and kind of wish I had the balls to just do it and check my email a total of, you know, 1 to 2 times per day, where I just mass bulk downloaded everything. That just sounds...
I can feel a Network World article coming on.
Free. Oh, I don't think I actually have the power to do it. I don't think I can. I don't think I can stop myself from hopping online to check something out. I don't think I can anymore. I just want to be able to.
Oh, no, no, I've listened to your idea and I'm convinced. No way, I'm not convinced. It's still stupid. But give it a shot and let us know how you get on.
You know, actually, what might be great, because really, a lot of what I need the internet for is basically the equivalent of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? I want to look up the infinite font of knowledge, and that's what I use it for. So if I could have a actual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that had that full font of knowledge just in my pocket all the time, I might be kind of interested. Like those devices that they were selling for a little while with a complete download of Wikipedia on them. Like maybe I do need something like that in my pocket, where I don't treat that as online time. That's just me looking something up, right? Maybe, and I like sync it like every evening or something like that to have the latest Wikipedia. Maybe that would do it for me. I don't know. But I think there's got to be ways that we as a society can come up with that make it so we don't just have to take digital breaks. We just have a more cohesive, symbiotic relationship where it's healthy with the technology, unlike now where it's just unhealthy and we have to figure out ways to take breaks, and we have to beat small children so that they don't look at their phones instead of other human beings, and so that when you're sitting at fucking dinner, people put their goddamn cell phones down instead of just staring at them the entire time they're eating their friggin' shrimp linguine. We need to find a way to get to that point, and maybe we need to take drastic steps to figure out how to get to that point.
So tell us what you think, Bad Voltage listeners, on either Twitter, Google Plus, Facebook, or on our forum at community.badvoltage.org.
That's the most ridiculous thing.
So recently there seems to have been some kind of renewed interest in the concept of the Hyperloop. And since I had so much fun on the Mars One episode or segment, I figured let's talk about Hyperloop and see what this crew thinks about. Is it feasible? Is it possible? Where is it going? Etc. Now, for those of you not familiar with the Hyperloop, the term is just a registered trademark of SpaceX, which Elon Musk came up with, for a high-speed transportation of passengers or goods in tubes, in which capsules are propelled by linear induction motors and air compressors. So it's really kind
of, in other words, a bunch of science fiction bullshit. That's what he just muttered off right now.
No, hang on.
So nothing really new conceptually. I mean, we've been transporting things in pneumatic tubes, not people, but things for a long time. New York City mail system.
Now we do know, though, for a fact.
So yeah, there's kind of three companies working on this.
I've seen Futurama, and everything is in those tubes in Futurama, and it looks kind of bitchin'.
Fair. It does look kind of bitchin', which I think is why a lot of people are interested in it, right? And I think especially in the United States, for those of you who are from elsewhere, the high-speed train network is terrible, and by terrible, I mean non-existent. Right? We have, like, the Acela that goes from New York to D.C., and as far as high-speed trains go, that's about it. There's the rumored one in California that's way over budget already and way behind schedule that will probably be done in 20 never.
Yeah.
So I think people really want this to happen. So there's three companies working on it now, right? Hyperloop One, Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, and Transpod. And then SpaceX is helping. They're building a test track in California, and then having a competition, which actually just got delayed. HTT is building another test track also in California, and Hyperloop One is building a test track in Vegas. Now, with all that said, with all the problems that people are having, Hyperloop One's already going through all kinds of drama, sued, countersued, breach of contract allegations, violation of California labor law, all kinds of stuff.
Fun stuff.
Like I said, SpaceX pushed back the Hyperloop pod competition to 2017 because the companies asked for more time. What do you guys think of this?
Well, we should clarify, first of all, because this confused me when I first got into it. I thought Hyperloop was being done by Elon Musk, and it totally isn't. He had the idea, and then went, okay, I'm essentially open sourcing the idea and my engineering thoughts or whatever. I'd like to see a bunch of people pick up on this idea. So as Jeremy says, there are three separate companies working on it, but I didn't realise that. I thought it was all Musk. And yeah, Hyperloop One have had some kind of big split-up thing. It was originally set up by some people who were fairly closely associated with Musk. And then some guy called something like Bada Bing, Bada Boom left, and they got sued.
He does have the greatest name ever, yes.
So I suppose there are two different kind of sides to this, really. Is the technology viable, and is the politics viable? The thing, when we talked about Mars One...
I got to add one, though. Is the economics viable?
Oh, well, yeah, okay. But I'm assuming, there's a private company. If they get a bunch of funding, they can build the thing, even if it makes a gargantuan loss. It's not like that's foreign to the whole California experience.
I think we also need to add another thing. Is the catering viable? Because realistically, lots of forms of transportation are viable until you get on board for more than 6 hours, and then the kitchen staff is just real shit. So I think we need to add in that fourth item.
You know, on this thing for 6 hours. You get in a Hyperloop for 6 hours, you'd be on the moon. Well, then what's the whole idea is it does 900 miles
an hour. If you're not going to the
moon,
what's the fucking point of having a Hyperloop? That's all I'm saying. Because we have all these different modes of transportation right now, right? I mean, how much high-speed train can we build? Do we really need something that's even faster than mega crazy 8,000 miles per hour high-speed train? I don't really think so. I mean, not if you're doing like a commute even from Northern California to Southern California. So Hyperloop seems totally rad and totally science fictiony, but like, why? We can't even get the stuff we already know how to build quite right. We can't even manage to build trains. We suck so much at building things, we can't build things that we've been building for 150 plus years easily. So
but bear in mind here, part of the reason that trains, well, I mean, much as the American intercity transport network is woeful, some of that is because America's quite big, right? It's not like you could build a network of trains like they've got, say, here in the UK. Because if you build a train which goes from Chicago to New York, say, it would take 3/4 of a day to get there, and there aren't enough people doing that journey who are prepared to blow out a day in doing it. If you could do that in an hour, then you open up a whole bunch of stuff that you just didn't have before. People can go from San Francisco to LA for a meeting rather than a day, in the same way that you go from one suburb to another for a meeting.
Yeah, but if we can't even get the transportation from the suburb to the city right, why even worry all that much? Like, I don't want to be the party pooper. I don't want to be the guy that comes in and poops on a maglev, because I'm pretty sure if you poop on a maglev, something's going to explode. Like, something horrible is going to happen if I poop on a maglev. But realistically, I mean, we can't get from the suburb of New York to inside New York relatively easily. We can't get from Bellevue, Washington, to Seattle, Washington super easily. I mean, even though those things are just like separated by what, 12 miles. So maglev isn't going to solve any of those problems at all. Like, it just It just isn't. So it's really
sure.
So,
it is.
But like, how is that going to solve it? Where a 2-minute train ride or a 2-minute subway ride wouldn't solve it, because those things we can't even build. We can't even build those, even though the technology's been around for 1.5 billion years. So that's where I'm at. I just don't even. If we can't build a car right, how can we build a maglev? And why? What is that actually going to even get us?
So we're talking about kind of two different things, though. The politics of the United States currently just kind of dictates that public transportation doesn't get well funded. And that's not going to change in the near future, Hyperloop or not. I think part of his assertion is that Hyperloop is so cheap that it will get funded. But if you look at his kind of assumption for the funding model, it was basically that he needed no easements, no right of way. He was just going to build it on the I-5 for free.
Yeah.
And that's why it would be so cheap. And I don't think that's going to happen. So, and the problem, too, with this plan for the Hyperloop specifically is it started way outside of L.A. and ended way outside of San Francisco, which doesn't make any sense, because then while that little segment would be super fast, it would still take you forever to get from city center to city center.
That is the thing.
And that's what you really want, right?
Brian, when you say, we can't get, why can't we have a 2-minute train ride? I think the answer is if you took the existing train line and you had two stops on it, one at each end, and that was it, that would be fine. You could get a fast train. The problem is it stops everywhere in between.
Right? No, that's true. That's fair.
The whole.
But then we're talking about two different things, too. I don't think I agree with you that the United States is too big. We're too big maybe for a completely national high-speed rail system. But your example from Chicago to New York, that's only like 750 miles. Even the train in Japan regularly travels in the low to mid threes. So that would be a 2-hour ride from Chicago to New York, which are two massive cities. That's a viable route.
Distinction. The point is not the distance between the two endpoints. It's that there's no reason to stop in between. If you're going from Birmingham to London.
But let's say you did Chicago. You could add my Buffalo, because that gives you access to Toronto, which is
a pitching place.
Big city. You could do Pittsburgh. You can... There's enough density, especially in the Northeast. What I think would make sense, and I'd like to see personally, is a high-speed train system in the United States. There's a Western Corridor one where you could do Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., San Diego, let's say, and there's density along that route. You could do a Northeast one, including Chicago, you know, over to the East Coast of New York City and a little bit up and down, you know, maybe as south as D.C., and then probably a Southeast one and maybe a Texas one or something. And while you might not be able to connect those realistically, because then you are going huge amounts of distance with nobody there, and that makes it a little bit financially not viable. I think regional high-speed transportation via train is very viable, but you have a lot of lobbying against it. You have a highway system that doesn't want that to happen. You have an airline system that doesn't want that to happen. And those are a lot of very large corporate entities and, you know, interests that have a lot of lobbying power. And
yeah, it's just not happening.
It's also very difficult in the United States to use eminent domain to get that much land now. Like, that's the one nice thing about the Hyperloop, because it uses the pilings. It doesn't need a lot of land.
Yeah.
You're really cutting through neighborhoods and stuff with high-speed rail, and that's really a contentious thing.
It should be. In terms of the high-speed rail not being viable thing, I'm mainly relying on a big discussion about a high-speed rail link, proposed high-speed rail link between Chicago and St. Louis. Right, where a bunch of people say, well, why can't we have this? It seems like a really obvious thing to do. And the answer was it's just not viable enough. There aren't enough people wanting to travel in between those two destinations to defray the gargantuan setup.
And there is the thing.
I think part of that is a lot of people don't realize how nice traveling on high-speed trains is, because they haven't done it in Europe or they haven't done it in Japan, where there more people would use it than do travel in between all those cities now. If I could hop on a train and get to New York City in less than an hour, or Chicago in less than an hour, or Pittsburgh in basically 20 minutes, I would travel exponentially almost more than I do now. Right. I would travel.
It's a game changer.
I think the speed thing.
It makes things easy. It makes a day trip easy. It makes having a meeting in the city easy, even though I live in Buffalo.
I think
it would change the definition of travel.
You could go.
And that's why Europeans travel all the time and Americans don't.
You could go somewhere for an evening. You know, I mean, one of the things, they're currently looking at building what they call HS2, the second high-speed rail line here in the UK, in between Birmingham and London. I'm not necessarily sure it's a good idea, and I am necessarily sure that it's a gargantuan boondoggle. But nonetheless, if they do build it, I'll be able to go door-to-door, my flat, to London in about 45 to 50 minutes. At that point, I can just go down, have a couple of beers with someone and come back again, which at the moment I can't do. So it opens up the idea of going a place without it being a holiday. You don't need to book a hotel or take a day off work or lose the whole productive afternoon because you had a meeting in the morning. I mean, Jono, we used to go backwards and forwards from San Francisco to LA. And you kind of go, well, I've got to really go down for 2 days and stay in a hotel in between because otherwise it's just not worth the thing. You can't go there and back in one day. In any kind of sensible way. Right. Hyperloop's meant to fix that. Whether it will is another question. But I'm okay with the concept of it. If you can make a thing do the speed
of sound. So we all agree high-speed travel is good, then. Okay. So let's just kind of back up to what we were originally talking about. Do we think this is... Let's start with technically possible.
Sure.
The Hyperloop.
Sure, man.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, none of the they're not inventing any mad science fiction anti-gravity stuff. I mean, yeah, fine, it's maglev, and they've all switched to maglev because you can't get air cushions properly otherwise. But as far as I can tell, there's nothing radical about the technology which prevents it from happening. It's just that, as far as I can tell, everyone's Hyperloop plan is the technology works, therefore it's okay.
Which is a pretty cool plan. I mean, to be fair, like, that's a very, you know, Iron Man, Tony Stark-ish plan. I created the technology, therefore, let's go ahead and fucking do it. So I kind of am aboard with that.
That only works if you are Tony Stark, right, or Elon Musk, but he's not actually on board.
Hey,
it's just a bunch of guys met on Reddit.
Hey, don't limit people, man. If people want to be
Tony Stark,
that's
the one thing I think that's interesting about
the Stark.
Hyperloop concept with Musk is... He seems to be very interested in it, but you look at SpaceX, ton of his personal money's in it. You look at Tesla, a ton of his personal money's in it. Even SolarCity, a ton of his personal money's in it. Hyperloop came out with the idea, open sourced it, not a dollar in it.
Yeah.
Personal money. I find interesting.
In the bloke's defense, right, he's clearly got more ideas than
he's
got time
to
operate. And he doesn't want to just save up the ideas and say nothing about them. He's like, someone should build this. I'd build it, but I'm already... taking humanity into space and fixing the world electricity transportation system.
Is Jeremy insinuating that Elon Musk is kind of punking everybody by unleashing this piece of technology that he wants us all to invest a huge amount in that he knows is intentionally going to like explode and create the most massive train catastrophe of all time? Is that the insinuation? Because that would be rad if that was the case. that would be awesome.
That would be
like the most epic trolling ever.
It's interesting that there was somebody, and I can't think who it was,
George
came up
Costanza.
With the idea that when you invent a new form of transportation, you invent a new form of disasters to go along with it. Before there were cars, there weren't car accidents, right? the Hyperloop team did an AMA on Reddit last week, and someone put to them that question. Do you not think that by inventing this brand new form of transportation, you're inventing a brand new form of disaster when something goes wrong? And two of the, you know, the capsules, which as far as I can tell, are like the little things you get inside a Kinder Egg, smack into one another at 900 miles an hour. What's this going to be like? And the guy was like, nah, dude, that's not going to happen. We're really safe.
Well, no.
And that was
no,
the
wait
whole
a minute. To be fair, though, Kinder Eggs are transported across the ocean and across countries on boats and trains and cars and buses by guys named Steve who really don't care about the Kinder Eggs, who chuck the boxes into the 7-Eleven. And at the end of the day, those Kinder Eggs survive. And that's kind of a remarkable thing. If we can make chocolate Kinder Eggs that are hollow and basically have no structure survive that journey, I think we can probably make custom titanium, whatever the hell they're made out of, box little tubes that we're in, survive as well. I'm guessing we'll be okay on that front.
This is critically important, though. If I want to send a small plastic toy from San Francisco to Los Angeles, I have no problem with doing it at 900 mile an hour. My daughter, different question.
But I think that's, aside from being technically possible, which I agree with Stuart, there's no new physics that need to be discovered here to make this happen, right? I think it's within the realm of what we're capable of building, kind of, right now. It'll probably take a little while to invent some new things to build, to work out some of the kinks. But do we want to travel in very small tubes, sealed, without being able to get up? There's no bathrooms, you can't do anything. Is that a desirable mode of transportation, even if it does get you to LA from San Francisco in 30 minutes? Is that something that people are going to want to do in numbers enough
to be
that
clear,
make this viable?
I am going to pee on one of these. The very first time I take one, I am going to go to the bathroom on it, because I want to see what happens to my pee-pee flow as I am traveling along at 8 bajillion miles per hour. This is something I want to see happen. So I don't know about you
guys, but if there's no toilet,
I'm just peeing on the floor. That shit's for real.
So your plan here is to go up to Elon Musk and say, okay, you've built a rail gun. I'll pay you money so you can put me inside it. And then when you're inside it, you're going to annoy the guy.
Yeah.
This is not the way forward.
No, this is exactly the way forward, because this is what's happening. And Elon Musk needs to get on the gravy train, because this shit's leaving the station.
So, yeah, the technology, I think we're all roughly agreed. There's politics and economics. Assume, for the moment, the economics thing, either enough people are going to go on it or they aren't. If they aren't, it's not going to work. But that applies to ice cream shops just as much as it does to Hyperloop. The politics is what I'm interested in. Could you actually get this thing built?
In a useful way, I don't think so. If he wants to do his I-5 plan and have it way outside San Francisco and way outside L.A., maybe. But then it's a terrible idea and shouldn't be done.
But then it's useless, yeah.
Makes no sense, yes. But that, I mean, that's the nice thing about trains, right, compared to flying, is it gets you from city center to city center. That's
the whole point.
Yeah.
So having the Hyperloop not be in city center.
Well, hang on, what? No, it doesn't.
I can't even believe that it was part of the plan.
Planes absolutely do not do that.
That's what I said. That's the difference between planes and trains. Trains get you to city center.
So
having the Hyperloop be super fast but be like going to airports is a terrible experience.
Yeah, I think it's just stupid.
So you'll get off at a Hyperloop station one. There are sort of three different areas here. You've got, could it happen in California? Could it happen in the US? And could it happen anywhere? Because they're talking about a run from Helsinki to, I think, Stockholm.
Yes, and now they're Putin's talking about one in Russia.
Yeah. So California does not seem like the place for this, but there's an enormous amount of political capital invested in the idea of the California high-speed rail stuff, right, which has been a disaster and hasn't happened. But going up against that, I don't know whether he picked San Francisco to LA because it's what he lives near, or a journey that he needs to do a lot, or whether he thinks it's actually a good idea, or just because that's where the
idea is. Yeah, he's from California. They think the center of the universe is California up and down I-5. That's just how it is. I used to live down there. I felt the same way when I did. It's fine. We'll cut him some slack for that.
Do you think, I mean, we've seen, if you try and revolutionize stuff, we've already seen Musk have a bunch of problems with existing entrenched interest in getting Teslas out there and running. You know, car dealers saying we want to ban Tesla from being able to sell in this state and so on. And this is going to be 50 times as bad as that. And more importantly, not have Elon Musk on
board. I don't know that it's going to be 50 times as bad. I mean, it's not like he has to sell a billion individual maglevs. He just has to get the rights and the people on board to do it once, and then you're good to go. But I still don't know if it's going to get done, and in part because of everything that Jeremy just pointed out, I don't know that it's terribly practical. Like, I really dig the science behind it. I really want to see them build a crisscrossing network of fucking awesome pneumatic tubes all over the country. That sounds bitchin'. I just don't actually see a use for it. We can't build high-speed rail networks that actually function in the country, so We can't even build a good transport from the city centers to the airports. So if the city centers to the airport transportation sucks, then the point of maglev is moot, because as Jeremy pointed out, this is going to be kind of going to a maglev station. So then what's the point of it? I don't see the point.
You can totally imagine this situation where you go, right, I'm in LA, I need to get to San Francisco for a meeting. So the first half an hour of your journey is on this fantastic new maglev science fiction thing in a tube. And then you spend another hour and a half on BART getting into the center of town.
Yeah, literally.
Right? Which is not for quite as R.C. Clarke as you might hope for.
Interestingly,
no.
If you pee on the floor of the maglev egg on the way, I'm assuming everyone's going to do that, so there's going to be pee all over the floor. It'll be the same experience, really, because that's pretty much all BART is. It's just a giant moving platform of urine. So really, it's just cohesive.
Harsh. Harsh to the BART people. But
You should work for their marketing team, Hyperloop. BART, but faster.
Is there anything you think these companies can do to get around the politics? I mean, I quite like Brian's idea of just go ahead and build it, screw it.
Right. And then
once you've done that, everyone goes, wow, this is actually a really cool idea after all, and all the objections fall away.
What do you mean just go ahead and build it? Like go into people's backyards, start building concrete pilings, and then put a giant tube there?
Yeah, do it overnight. Do it like in one evening.
You can't just build infrastructure.
Fuck you, Jeremy. This is the best idea Stewart's ever had. Let's call this the maglev surprise. Just we all go to bed one night and we all wake up and fuck, there's a maglev in my yard. And it goes, you don't know where, but you hop on it, you hop in the egg.
Where did this giant tube come from?
If this happens to you, Jeremy, you open your front door and like your door doesn't open all the way because it bonks into a maglev pylon or something like that.
Shut up! And then
you get outside and you're like, and there's a tube waiting for you with a little post-it card and it just says Jeremy on it. And you open it up and it says, get in, winky face emoticon. Are you going to get in or not? You're going to fucking get into that maglev egg.
Sorry about your door. You have one half-price ticket. Now.
So, my point was, exactly as Jeremy pointed out, this is not like building a railway line where you have to buy this huge strip of land which cuts right through people's houses, right? You just buy a bunch of sticks and then it's in the air.
Yeah.
So you don't have to get that much. I admit, if you build a 400-mile-long metal tube, just going, it doesn't touch the ground, so that's okay. It's going to get you the hairy eyeball from a bunch of planning permission people.
In the city of Seattle, there's this thing called the Alaskan Way Viaduct. It is a small part of basically like a two-lane freeway that is elevated. It's on these big sticks, elevated above the city, kind of near the waterfront. It runs for a set number of blocks. It is not that long, not really. It has taken literally decades for them to figure out how to reinforce some sticks, and then it took them a few more decades to figure out, should we tear those sticks down and put up some new sticks in a slightly different spot? So, and this is a couple blocks worth of putting up these sticks, and it's taken decades and millions and millions of dollars over budget. There is no possible, and it's a shitty bridge. I'm going to be honest with you. It looks like it should fall over. And that's what we've got. I don't see how anyone's going to be able to build maglev anywhere at all, period.
Well, it's even just the tube. Looking at the engineering problems, they were saying the thermal expansion, if you built a tube from LA to San Francisco, given the variances in heat in California, it would be about 3 football fields worth of thermal expansion in between worst case and best case. And their answer was to put the things that go on the airport, those accordion things at the end on the stations. So that means the station is going to move 150 yards at each station, so you don't know where you're... I mean, I think they have underestimated some of the problems they're going to run into.
Birmingham New Street is the central station here in Birmingham. If you took that and you moved the whole station 3 football fields in one direction, you'd flatten half the city. You can't do that.
Yes.
That's... You do get the impression that they've taken the art of hand-waving away the problems. you turned it up to 11, right? Just kind of, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Literally, in this case.
But here's the thing. It's still cool, so, futuristic-y and science fiction-y, so we probably should build a bunch of these, you know?
Super
we probably should.
So I was going to say, it's kind of bringing this train into the station, if you will. We've established that it's probably at some point technologically possible. Probably not economically or politically viable, I think. So the question is, do we think it's going to happen? So it's clearly not Mars One absurd.
Yeah.
Right? It is within the conceivable realm of maybe being possible. Do we think it will happen? anywhere.
I don't think it will, but it'll be sad that it doesn't.
I think someone will build one somewhere, yeah. Ideally, someone will build a thing connecting two cities which are 400 miles apart, and they won't. It'll be connecting a thing which is 6 miles apart, and instead of that journey taking you 12 minutes, it will take you 3 minutes, and everyone will go, what's the
They're going to replace the monorail at Disney World.
9 minutes, whoop-do. But I think people build that and then point at it and say, we should do this for more places. That would be great, and then it won't happen. But I think one will get built. Jeremy, what do you think?
I can't imagine that it happens in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. Yeah. Of the current ones under... The problem with... I could see it happening in somewhere like Japan, right? Except for the fact that they have a massive existing high-speed train system that they've dumped a bunch of money in. Yeah. So had that not been in place, yeah, they could have built it there maybe. I could see them doing in Russia just because Putin's going to do what he wants to do without very little regard for what's financially or any viability is not really in his vocabulary. He just does things. So I could see it happening there just because he wants it to happen. Elsewhere, I think in too many countries where it would make sense, high-speed trains are already there and this isn't better enough. And in the US, I don't know about that.
I mean, Stockholm and Helsinki, they're talking about it being 20 minutes apart by Hyperloop, which is pretty cool, as you mentioned, Russia. The other people looking at it is the United Arab Emirates, which I'm not necessarily sure they need it, but given the unbelievable palace of excess that is Dubai, you can imagine this being built. Like the monorails you used to get at amusement parks and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You can imagine them having a Hyperloop for the same kind of thing. Connecting.
But, I mean, considering high-speed trains already go low threes, would you rather... Let's say we can get them to go mid-fours, which is half of what the Hyperloop goes. Would you rather sit in a nice plush seat, be able to get up to go to a dining car, yeah, be able to go to the bathroom, and instead of it taking 40 minutes, it takes double that? I would rather do that.
Totally on board.
Good times.
So how's China?
The best times.
How's China?
Chinese. I have to applaud Mr. Bacon for showing up to the show despite going through about 16 VPNs from a hotel in China. Well played.
I'm hoping the Chinese government are not listening to this. it's been great. I'm currently in Nanjing. Came over here from Beijing. And it's been a good week so far, although I'm about ready to come home. 'Cause one of the things I've noticed about China is it's mentally exhausting to be in China because everything is a puzzle. Like, you know, figuring out how to use the train, figuring out how to order food, talking to the reception lobby people, because most people don't speak English, so therefore it's a game of mime or trying to figure out what the words mean, and it's just cognitively exhausting.
But that's not exhausting about being in China, that's just being anywhere other than Walnut Creek.
Well, I find that when I'm in Europe, I can kind of figure a lot of stuff out, whereas of course you can't in China because the language is so completely different.
This is why it's a good idea to teach you French at school, you see.
I'm not sure how that would help in China.
Well, no. It doesn't help in China, but that's why you can get by in Europe. It's not because you're magically more able to read German.
No, but I think you can figure things out. I have to tell you one thing.
Well, actually, technically, yeah, you are magically more able to read German because English is a heavily Germanic-influenced language, and there's roots of it. Chinese is just crazy chicken scribbles. So, I mean, that's a pretty big difference.
No, it isn't.
So my daughter's taken Mandarin classes for about 4.5 years now. None of it makes any sense to me whatsoever. I've gone to classes with her. I've sat in those classes with her. I've tried to do the homework with her, doing the pinyin and writing the script out, and she does it fairly well, and my wife does it fairly well. It all sounds completely alien to me, even after 4.5 friggin' years. French? Nah, French isn't not so much of a problem because French is just French. It's easier for our brains. Chinese is crazy, man. I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Well, here is a chance for an interesting experiment. I mean, I appreciate this is a bit like that film Raising Kane, but you ought to come to Europe, bring your daughter, and see how she gets on in, say, Italy.
Well, she does pretty well. So we've spent a lot of time like over in like the Netherlands and whatnot. And when she was there, in within about a week, she was starting to pick up a lot of the Dutch phrasing and whatnot. Then they spent about a month in Ireland, and she was actually picking up basically Gaeltacht. I mean, it was crazy. So the little kids can pick it up, but old people that are not very smart, such as John O'Bacon, they can't pick up the Chinese that easily. Like, that's hard.
That wasn't even subtle. That was just direct.
That was just downright mean for no reason, as far as I can
say. Yeah, it truly was.
I was about to say, the real hero of this show is one Brian London, who got up
at
5 o'clock in the morning to come and record. Because I'm in bloody China, we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for me screwing everything up. So thank you, Brian. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And thank you. Thank you for being here and being so beautiful. It's lovely seeing you at this hour. To wake up at 5 friggin' a.m. in the morning and see John O'Bacon's face is nothing but heartwarming.
You like that?
I do. I like that.
Yeah, you do.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, so and it's been nice hearing the slightly high version of Brian. A lot more chilled out in the morning. I like this. We should do this more often. I'm coming to China every week, guys.
I don't know whether it's just because it's 5 o'clock in the morning or because he's not six coffees in or what.
Stoned from the night before still.
So, yes, that was Bad Voltage 73. Right. Thank you very much, all of you. And we look forward to the next show.
We are? Bye. Wait, are we really looking forward to the next show, or are we just saying that to people so they like are like, oh, they like doing this, they're not being held hostage, like, is that what we're doing?
Shut up, you're giving it away, man.